Welcome to this podcast from the Commonwealth Club of California, a nonprofit and nonpartisan forum open to the public. To attend a Commonwealth Club event, check out our program listing at www.commonwealthclub.org. Now we join today's program of the Commonwealth Club.
Good evening. I'm David Ewing Duncan, and I want to welcome you to tonight's meeting of Inforum. It's a division of the Commonwealth Club by and for people in their 20s and 30s with a mission to inspire debate around civic issues. Tonight, we're going to talk about something that I find quite fascinating, about online personas and defining the self in the virtual world, or in a virtual world. In 1954, J.A. Barnes coined the term social networking. He was writing about a village in Norway. I don't know if you've seen this book, but he decided that the ideal number of people to interact in a social network was 150 people. Okay. The combined networks of the panelists sitting to my left, I don't know what it is today, but it's about 40 million, 50 million people. And that number is probably low, and it's going up all the time. And keeping track of those numbers is one of the difficult things because this is such a fast-moving target. In fact, this week, MySpace is the number four most visited site, according to Alexa, which is a metric site, and that's just behind Google, and they're actually closing in on some of the top three, including Google. Facebook is as high as number seven, and in some of the metrics. So what is going on here? And more important for tonight's discussion is, who are these people? I mean, in that sense, who are the visitors? Who are we that are paying attention and going on to these sites? And I mean this literally, because tonight we're talking about defining the self in a new age of Imers, bloggers, podcasters, burners, P2P buccaneers, mashup artists, and phone cam paparazzi. When people have entirely new ways of expressing and reinventing themselves, and fact can blend with fiction. And I'd first like to introduce our panelists, who are in the thick of this latest cyber revolution. We have Robin Harper, the Vice President of Community for Second Life. And Second Life is a 3D virtual world entirely built and owned by its residents. Since opening in 2003, it's grown explosively, and today is inhabited by almost 2 million people from around the globe. Actually, I went on last night and it's 1.7 million, but I think it adds people almost constantly. Sean Gold is a senior vice president at MySpace, a network of personal profiles, friends, blogs, groups, photos, music, and videos, and I think a whole lot more. It's home to various musicians, filmmakers, celebrities, and comedians, and I'm sure a lot of you, who upload their work to share with a larger community. Mark Zuckerberg is a founder and CEO of Facebook. Facebook is made up of school, company, or regional networks that allow people to share information the way they would in the real world. We're going to be talking a lot tonight, by the way, about the real world, and we might even get into a discussion on what the heck the real world is in these days. Reid Hoffman is a founder and CEO of LinkedIn, a site that helps people be more effective in their daily work and open doors using their professional relationships. LinkedIn has a network of more than 8 million users representing 130 industries. And why don't we please welcome our panel. Okay, now, we're talking about defining the self here. We're talking about personas, who we are. And this has been some subject of thought for many centuries, but it's fair to say that we're moving pretty fast into a new realm, a virtual realm or whatever we want to call it. And I wanted to ask each of you, just to get things started here, what the heck? If you could be anybody you wanted to be, or anything for that matter, who would it be or what would it be? Start with Robin.
Well, I've had the opportunity to be just about anything I want to be, but I find that being myself is a handful enough. So in Second Life, I am who I am.
So your first life and second life are the same?
I have a different name, but otherwise I'm the same, yes.
Sean?
I'm going to have to go with Will Rogers. Never met a man he didn't like. He got along with, you know, regular folk, dignitaries. He was an ambassador for America, probably one of the best ambassadors we ever had.
So you want to be living in the 25th century?
Well, is this alive or dead? I guess he's dead, so that's a thing, a dead thing. Will Rogers.
So you want to be a dead guy. Okay.
Sure.
Mark.
I can't beat that.
We're going to have a long evening if you don't if you have an answer like that. Come on. You're in the virtual world. What do you want to be?
How about Cher? Cher's cool.
Yeah, Cher is a feature we just launched. It's pretty cool. Sure.
Okay. Reed. Beat that.
Unfortunately, one of the problems going last is I was also going to answer myself, in part because part of the whole thing about having a professional profile is you represent who you are, including, for example, if someone Googles you by name. So I would say myself.
Okay. Well, this is interesting. Since you guys are at the forefront of creating the virtual world, at least two of you want to be yourself. What does this mean? By the way, I debated whether to give them that question before so they'd have time to think about it. Maybe we'll come back around if you guys have anything more to say about who you'd like to be. Since you're asking us to, you know, the public, to change ourselves and at least a couple of the sites, I think it'd be interesting to maybe circle back again to that. In fact, on that same kind of idea of tooling around in a virtual world, I'm wondering, there's a big debate out there about, you know, is this helping us? Is it harming us? You know, what is this idea of being able to basically link in, talk to a bunch of people, in some cases be yourself, in some cases not, in some cases create a whole new person? Is this something that's, you think, is a harmless release for people, or is it something that we should worry about? Anybody want to jump in here?
I'll jump in. Sean Gold from MySpace.com, place for friends. I think it's it's ultimately a positive thing. I mean, any technology can be used incorrectly, but it's about empowerment and efficiency in the socialization process. All youth culture goes through this process of breaking away from their parents and creating their own identities, and sites like MySpace, Facebook, other sites on the internet create this empowering tool to do identity production or personal branding, as marketers would call it, where they use video and images and graphics and music to position who they are as an individual. And they get feedback from their friends, and they get feedback from strangers, and they evolve it. And so, you know, it's positive in that way.
Anybody else want to jump in on that?
I mean, LinkedIn is all about accomplishing stuff that matters in the real world, right? So whether it's reconnecting with classmates or colleagues you've lost touch with, finding an expert to help you solve a problem, kind of getting an in to a company to do a deal with them, or possibly find a job or try to hire somebody. I mean, and the precise reason why it's the exact opposite of anonymity, and it's the exact opposite of kind of a playful fantasy world is because it's trying to empower what you're doing in the context of this panel, in your first life.
I guess what I would say is that when you have the opportunity to explore aspects of who you are, through the way that you express yourself, either by changing your gender or maybe putting on your sad avatar today instead of your happy one, whatever. When you have that opportunity, to me it's another form of introspection, and I think it's very healthy. You know, it only falls apart when you use it in a manipulative way and break trust.
I'm going to jump in here, by the way. I know that a lot of you are familiar with these terms, but explain what an avatar is.
In Second Life and in there and in most online games, the avatar is the character that you use to represent yourself in the world.
Okay, and in Second Life, in fact, you can be anything. You can be an animal. Like I saw a dragon who was having a hard time last night putting out a fire, for instance.
Yeah.
And was asking Second everybody, Life, shouting actually, help me put out this fire.
Yeah, you can. You can be very, very human. You can be an animal. You can be a Sputnik. You can be a robot, whatever.
Well, let me ask, while we're on the subject of reality or not of reality, is some of this encouraging a denial of reality? I mean, you're talking about empowerment, but do you have people who maybe are not so happy with their own life jumping in? We're talking about self here, creating a new self. Could that be a denial as well as an empowerment? Or does it matter? Does that matter?
Well, I'm not a psychologist. I don't really know if it's a bad or a good thing, but where I see it playing out to really positive advantage is for people who are in some way disabled in the real world. And Second Life gives them the opportunity to participate in a large community that's very social, has very successful entrepreneurs, and they can participate in that community on a level playing field in a way that they can't in the real world.
Yeah, yeah. Does anybody else want to comment on that? Is this a denial of reality in a way? I mean,
I think any time you get new technologies and new ways of expressing media and people, you always get this. I mean, you got this with television. You know, I'm sure that back when radio was created, it was a similar kind of, oh, it's alienation of what it is to be human, as opposed to another vehicle for expressing it. So I just tend to think that it's like, look, there's new vehicles and new media. Actually, one of the things I think is awesome about the internet in general, which is true, I think, of all of the panelists, is it's a way of publishing essential parts of yourself in one framework or another in order to hopefully build better social ties, whether it's in the case of like LinkedIn and Facebook is based on connections that already exist in the real world, or kind of the tricking out your page and in MySpace, or you know, participating in Second Life.
I think it's healthy. I think it rekindles the spirit of play. You know, when we were kids, we role played all the time, pretended to be different things, and for some reason we stopped. And this allows you to, you know, continue to do that, experiment, you know, have fun, take on different personas. I mean, as long as you use it for good instead of evil, obviously, it's positive.
I mean, I don't think it has to just be about creating a new persona. I know that on Facebook, most of what people do is communicate with their real identity. So, I mean, I also don't think it's necessarily about good or bad change from the real world. I think that people choose to communicate online because it's a more efficient way to do what they would have done in other places. So, I mean, at Facebook, I know we focus a lot on efficiency of information flow, helping people communicate efficiently, helping people publish information about themselves that they want to efficiently. And that means having the control over who you share it with, being able to say who you really are or, you know, anything about yourself.
I mean, we do have a pretty wide range of spaces here, actually, and it's sort of, I mean, funny in some ways that we have this range because, you know, we range from very real, like LinkedIn, to a virtual space. So we have to keep that in mind. In fact, I was reading there are at least 200 of these spaces out there, and they range from, a site for 5,000 people who are real estate professionals, you know, who are talking to each other, to, you know, MySpace and some of the huge ones and a lot. My favorite one that I saw today was Sneaker Play. Apparently it's people who are into sneakers.
I think we're actually in order of reality on the panel here.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, I think you are.
Reality, what a concept.
And what does that make me, being on?
Oh. Freak.
In fact, since I'm, you know, sort of out here alone, not sitting there with you guys, the next question I was going to ask is about the idea. And what I'm going to do here is raise some of the issues that people have been talking about. And, you know, we're very privileged to have a group like you to answer some of these things that we all read about. So that's what I'm doing here. I mean, I think it's a fabulous sort of experiment what's going on. So I don't mean to sound, you know, like I'm being negative about it, but I think it's just interesting to find out from you guys, straight from your mouths, real mouths, in fact, about some of these issues. This idea of reality and communicating, it's an interesting notion that you're communicating sometimes with thousands of people, and yet you're by yourself. and there is that a barrier there. Do you guys worry that you're creating a world or a space for people where you don't have as much human interaction?
I personally don't. I think that actually more human interaction comes as a result of online communication. You vet out, and actually higher quality human interaction, because you vet out who's more appropriate for you. But think about kids today are in more controlled spaces than ever before. They go from work to after-school programs to sports in all socioeconomic classes. So they don't have the downtime that we did. So this offers sort of, again, empowerment and efficiency in that process. If you're like a 15-year-old kid in the suburbs of Denver, you don't have a car, you're stranded. You go home and you're done. Now the internet allows you to communicate with people, connect with like-minded people, especially if you're like the artsy kid or the smart kid who's slightly outcast in the suburbs. Now you can find, lots of people like yourself. It's actually a great time to be lonely on the internet.
I having kids, I think babysitter to some extent. But anybody else want to?
I mean, I agree with that. I think that these things are also good because they give you different mediums to communicate. Communicating in person is perhaps like the richest form of communication, but then there are others that cut out certain dimensions. So for example, talking on the phone, you don't see the person, but you hear them. It's synchronous. It's live, right? There are other forms like instant messenger that are still synchronous but have none of the other senses. And I think that one of the things that's great about these is that it's an asynchronous communication vehicle where you can put something in a profile somewhere and define who gets to see that, and then anyone who wants to consume that information, who has the rights to, can go later on and check it out. It's just really efficient, and it actually enables interactions that wouldn't have otherwise happened in the other ways, because there are lots of people who I'm just not going to call. I'm just like not that comfortable with them, but I'll communicate with them in a different way. Or maybe they can look at my profile because, I allow them to.
In terms of making connections, like one of the things that I thought was a unanticipated but very positive side benefit personally is I've had, friends that I've lost touch with from high school who actually ran parallel careers, right? One of the first guys who got in touch with me is a guy who actually worked at Amazon for a long time, and I literally hadn't talked to him since I graduated high school. And he found me, and that was a connection. That was because, finding ex-colleagues or classmates is actually enormously valuable. So,
relationship maintenance, I think, is the phrase de pays here at the Commonwealth Club tonight.
And you heard it right here. Were you guys shy when you were younger? Did you, are you?
Of course.
I imagine that you aren't now.
He's shy now.
Yeah, okay. So
he went into his shell.
So do you feel like, we're going to be delving in slightly into psychiatry here, as you said. None of us are psychiatrists. We don't want to go there into pseudo or any other way. But I'm just curious if this is something you guys personally feel comfortable with interacting in this way. You run companies now, so you have. I suppose you. Yeah. We have silence.
Well, I find when I am at a party, let's say, and I don't know anybody, that it's uncomfortable. And I find that when I go to the welcome area in Second Life, and there's all these new people that I've never met, that I feel in a uncomfortable in a similar kind of way. The difference being that we have something in common. We've all come to this place that's unique with the intention, perhaps, of being able to transcend ourselves in some fashion. And so, you kind of jump in and you can talk to people, and it gives you something to start with, I think.
Yeah. Now, I admit that I just went on your site for the first time last night, and I was feeling very shy walking around. For one thing, I didn't know what I was doing, Suddenly started dancing for some reason. I couldn't turn it off, but we talked about that. There is a way to turn it off if you start just spontaneously dancing. Well, part of what we're talking about here with the self or the expression of the self is there's a long history and progression of us sort of coming up out of the Middle Ages, when people didn't even have last names, and then we became more and more self-aware and kind of atomized and having our own sense of who we were within our culture. This has been called an expression of that. It's just a sort of continuum. But are we going to reach a point where everybody has basically got a pulpit? And who's gonna listen to all of that? Or does it matter?
Aren't we there already?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Andy Warhol said, you know, everyone is famous for 15 minutes. And as a result of social networking now, everyone is famous for 15 people. That would be that's the 21st century Andy Warhol expression.
Well, I guess that begs a question of what does it mean then to have a million friends? Because I know some people on your space. I mean, how can you have a million friends?
How can you? You know, Malcolm Gladwell, in The Tipping Point, was saying, like, the maximum number of relationships you can actually manage is, like, 130. What does it mean to have a million friends? It means you're very popular. I mean, you obviously can't manage those relationships. It's more about broadcasting at that point than it is interacting.
So it becomes a sort of pursuit unto itself to try to grab onto that many people, I guess.
I mean, the people who have a million friends are entertainers, and they entertain their friends. I mean, there's a saying that we choose our friends for our ability to amuse them. And actually, the reason that makes sense is that our self-images are supported by an inner newsreel that we play back of people's reactions to us. So if they think we're funny or charming or attractive, we like them. So if you go to my MySpace page and tell me I did a great job, I'll definitely be your friend.
I think the thing to keep in mind is that, you know, all of these different pieces of software are basically enablers. And what they allow you to do is to connect with people that you might not have connected with otherwise. You find people with common interests. You know, in Second Life, I've made friends with people all over the world that I wouldn't have met. And LinkedIn, I've, you know, as Rita's saying, I've reconnected with people that I haven't seen or heard from in a long time. And I've been introduced to people that I wouldn't have met otherwise. So I think it's less about, you know, do I have a million friends, and a lot more about, wow, I've met new people who are interesting and people that I wouldn't have had the chance to meet otherwise.
I think it's interesting that this 130 or 150 number keeps on coming up, because the average number of friends someone has on Facebook is right in that range. It's like around 125 or 130 or so. And I mean, I think that reflects that the relationships that people have on Facebook are real. You know, it's not really an application that's used for meeting people much at all. It's mostly just for keeping up with the people you know and getting a handle on what's going on in their lives, communicating with them.
No, in fact, I quoted right at the very beginning the original researcher that came up with that number, a guy named Barnes, who was writing about a village in Norway. But it was, you know, that's apparently been a number that's been around in sociology for a really long time. Mm-hmm. But those, I guess, those are connections with people who you really do have real or more sustained interactions with.
You think that number would go up from when was that research done?
1954.
Yeah, with. Do you think the number would go up with the efficiencies of communication?
Well, it may be the efficiencies of being a human. I mean, of being able to actually handle in a kind of sustainable or broad way with a certain number of people. I don't know. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you guys are right in the forefront of that. I don't know if you've ever talked to, if you have that kind of feedback from your visitors. But what do your visitors say about that? Anything? Have you talked to them about that?
I think the technology is of enabling you to kind of stay in touch with a group of people. It makes it easier when you have a technology to do that. It's easier to, for example, you know, when you share a piece of information, content, you update your profile, you let people know what's going on, right, that sort of thing. It's now much easier. I mean, there's, you know, I've got on LinkedIn about something about 1,170 contacts. And actually, they're all people I know. I've met them. I've known them. When they reach out to me and ask for an introduction to someone else, I know who they are. Now, some of them I haven't talked to in 3 or 4 years, right, because I've been busy. Startups are that way, right? But if they reach out to me through someone, I go, oh, actually, this is a really cool, you know, cool person, right? They're you know, they're serious, they're interesting, they're worth knowing. And that kind of referral enables them to get to somebody else. So I actually, I've found that the number of people that I can kind of keep in my orbit has been extended by my use of LinkedIn.
Anybody else want to comment on that? I think the issue of time is something that impacts here. It's do people really have time to do this? And you were just saying, 1,100 people you're LinkedIn with. If all those people all at once, or even a small fraction of them, ask you to do something for you, would you really, you wouldn't have time.
Well, the kind of thing, LinkedIn is targeted at professional things. So when people ask me for an introduction, it's something that really matters to them. And actually, one of the things I think that, part of building better communities is when can a small portion of my time make a big difference in someone's life? Making the right kind of introduction is that sort of thing. Right, so I'm actually always happy to do it. Now, occasionally what will happen is, oh, I'm really busy this week. I'll get to it on Saturday, right? But, forwarding an email is typing two or three sentences. It's about 90 seconds.
Reed, what is the average age group on LinkedIn?
Last we measured, I think it was 39.
So you have an older group.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we have the same progression. Probably not. I think we'll stop at Sean. But what are the average age groups on the other sites?
We're probably close to Facebook in the 18 to 25 is the core audience.
Yeah.
32 in Second Life.
Okay, so a little bit.
Yeah, older. Our average is right around 21 or 22.
I personally don't have as much time as I would like to be on these sites, and being inundated daily with email and all sorts of things, is there a sort of natural barrier, I guess, in the business model for something like this, where you're hitting certain ages, maybe that there are people in transition, say in work, or they're younger, they got more time, is there sort of a natural barrier where people just say, okay, enough, I don't have any more time to handle all of this?
I think that people do this because they need to communicate anyway, right? And this is a more efficient way for them to do that. So, we define ourselves as a utility at Facebook, and as such, we don't care so much about the number of page views that people do or the amount of time they spend on the site. As a matter of fact, I kind of prefer it when people can come and get what they need and go pretty quickly. Instead, what we measure most tightly is the percentage of our users that come back to the site daily, that find it an important enough part of their routine that they'll come back to the site every day. And this is the usage pattern that we have. It's something like, you wake up in the morning, you check email, you check Facebook, you shower, you go to work, read the news, check Facebook. short sessions. And the retention number, the daily retention is really large. It's 60% or higher sometimes, and we find that transcends all these demographics. We started off in college because that's where I was when I wanted this to exist, so I built it for my school, and we've been around for almost 3 years now, so we've had almost 3 years of people who were in college who graduated and now aren't in college anymore, which is why the average is 21, 22, and we find that the retention rate amongst people who are outside of school is right around the same as the retention of people in college. And the retention of all the high school users we have is right around the same as the retention of users in college. And, at this point, we're only about half college users overall. And, we just find that across this, just the amount of use that we get is just uniformly large. And, I think that just sort of shows that it's a utility. It helps people communicate more efficiently than they would be able to in other ways, or else they would just do those other things instead.
What about,
I would say we consider ourselves similar as a platform for self-expression, human connection, and the discovery of culture, which is a big part of what MySpace is about. And we're finding that certainly the older demographics that are coming to MySpace are coming for the discovery of culture. There's still a stigma, if you're over 40, to connect with someone online. It's embarrassing to say I met them, on MySpace or Match.com or whatever you're using. This generation, the under 25 generation, is the first generation to really take advantage of the efficiencies of digital communication and have no stigma, behind it. It's it's illogical not to use it. So, that's part of it. But because, we go pretty high, as far as demographics go, but and We're actually seeing that a lot of 38-year-olds are coming online. I was like, why are 38-year-olds coming online? Coming onto MySpace.
Not 37, but 38.
And it is because of the 20-year reunion we've seen a pop in that age. And, you know, fascinating.
Well,
guess that's what these guys live in all day long.
The stigma that you're referring to is generally actually in the kind of social dating stuff. I mean, LinkedIn and professional actually doesn't have that sort of stigma. And I actually completely concur with Mark's comments that the point is efficiency and utility. And because professionals who are over 30 usually, you know, are pretty pressed in their life, as you're describing, lack of time, part of what we focus on LinkedIn is when it's a high-value moment, not at a kind of a constant communication flow for that reason.
Yeah. I think Second Life is a little bit different because for many people it really is a place where they spend a majority of their time. We looked at one point at the top 10% in terms of usage, and their usage hours in a week were averaging about 84. And so
that's an average?
This is the top 10%. The amount of time that they spent was around 84 hours a week. And so, you know, we kind of stopped and thought about that for a bit and wondered.
Could we talk about addiction here?
Well, yeah, and that's the question. Is that a bad thing? And again, for... when you look at it, though, there are over 7,000 profitable businesses in Second Life. Profitable meaning they're making enough money in virtual currency that when they exchange it for U.S. dollars, it's paying minimally for the amount of money they spend in Second Life. But for many, it's become a living. And, you know, I spend 70 hours or more a week on my job. So for them, you know, that's what they're doing. And then for many people, it's their social life. It's where they go to be with their friends. They've met special people there. So, but it's different. It's different than checking in to see if somebody's left you a note, for sure.
I would like a job as a fire extinguishing dragon. Get paid for that? Because fire breathing dragons get most of the work.
True. I did notice I didn't burn up, though, when I went into the fire, so... So maybe it's not so bad to be a fire-breathing dragon as well. We've got a few more minutes here in the discussion time. Let's talk. I mentioned the word addiction. I guess that could get us into, again, some of the criticism of the sites. I know MySpace has gotten some criticism for who are some of the people online and what are their real motives. I mean, the dangers, you know, the predators, the people that might be out there, you know, with my son or my daughter. Right. You know, what are they really after?
MySpace is, but there's 130 million registrants on MySpace, about 90 million people visiting the site, and about 320,000 new members come on the site every day. So it's like, you know, over three times the size of California. It mirrors reality, and there's a new set of rules to deal with online communication. It's really to be safe in that environment. It's really about education. There's certain technologies that we deploy as well, but it's arguably safer than real life. You're not next to someone. You can vet people out. I mean, obviously, you shouldn't meet people in person, you know, without being in a public place, without a friend. So if used properly, it's, you know, much safer than real life. And your real life, your real life connections can be much safer.
Yeah. I mean, the guys at the other end of the table are mostly dealing with real people, I think, mostly, right? But
you can get stocked with a business plan.
Yeah. Well, it's in the business
you
plan.
You can get a bad business plan on LinkedIn. Yeah. That hurts.
What about in Second Life on this issue? I thought it was, when I went in last night, I found it fascinating what my response was, which is I started to talk to people, and I realized that they could be anyone. You know, I was looking at, you know, some good-looking woman or some or a dragon or something like that. And, you know, it could be literally anyone. And that was at least, you know, it's the first time on the site, but that was a little odd, but kind of interesting too. I mean, how do you deal with that barrier where people come in and you're having to get used to a whole new way of looking or using your imagination, I guess, interfacing with someone else's imagination?
Well, you know, it's that's the way it is on the internet. It's, what was that, New Yorker cartoon, I think? On the internet, nobody knows you're a dog. And you get to know people the same way that you get to know them in the real world. You talk to them, you get to know what they're interested in and what they like to do. And you don't know when you first meet them very much about them. But, you know, we also have safeguards in place for younger people. And we give people the option of saying as much or as little about themselves as they're comfortable saying. You know, you wouldn't give a lot of information about yourself until you trusted somebody, right? And I think the same thing is true of them. So as in any relationship, there's give and take and you get to know each other.
What about the idea of basically lying online? I mean, a lot of people lie about their age. They lie about, you know, who they are. Are we enabling some sort of truthiness, as Colbert might say?
Well, certainly verifying identity is a big issue for us. I imagine it is for everybody here. And there is a lot of work being done right now by various companies out there on how to authenticate what people tell you. And we're building a system into Second Life right now that'll help you to do that. It'll verify the things that people tell you about themselves in the real world.
And for 99.99% of the people on MySpace and, you know, Facebook and, of course, LinkedIn, it behooves you to give your correct information because you want to meet people in a similar age group and like-minded people. You know, there's always a couple bad apples. Spoil a bunch.
Yeah.
Maybe even in this audience here at the Commonwealth Club tonight.
Are any of you out there?
I don't want to name any names.
By the way, we're about 3 or 4 minutes from question time, and if anyone wants to ask questions, if you could kind of quietly make your way up to the microphone here, we'll start that in just 2 or 3 minutes here. I got to ask this, too. Is a lot of this a fad, do you think? I mean, I actually looked up the hula hoop. In 1958 and 59, Wham-O, remember that company? They were actually just sold for $80 million, believe it or not. Wham-O sold 100 million hula hoops. And the U.S. population at the time was about 175 million. So you had over half the population just go half be crazed and have to go out and buy a hula hoop. I mean, is there any element of that here, do you think, in what's going on?
I think there's an evolution of technology. There may be new things coming, but I mean, I think the trends that you see in where they're going, I don't think they're going to go away and then it's going to be returned to the bucolic agrarian past. Right?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, it's an evolution. You know, it's a fad. If everyone up here stops to evolve their platform, then it'll be a fad, like GeoCities. It was a fad. But as long as we evolve the self-expression platform, the communication platform, the content aggregation platform, speaking specifically on MySpace, and even, you know, the international platform, the safety and education platform, those are all things that will stop it from being a fad.
Just very, very quickly, is this going to replace MTV? Is it going to replace television as we know it?
No, YouTube is going to do that.
We don't have them up here. Okay, let's shift to the questions here. We have people already lined up. And if you could keep these really brief, we've got about 20 minutes, and we want to try to get to everyone if we can. So go to it.
Sure. I'm always impressed with the creativity of users when they come and use your tools. So each one of you knows your respective networks probably better than anyone in this room. What I'm interested in knowing is what has a user done to surprise you on your network that you were totally impressed by, each one? You can describe a user that really impressed you.
So the first usage on LinkedIn was guy moved to Denver. He was trying to figure out which company that he would be interested in working for. He searched for people like himself, saw which companies they were working at, and then went and investigated those companies. It was a use that we'd never thought of.
Any other surprises?
Somebody built a kite in Second Life that worked.
Okay.
You mean worked in the site? Or?
There's wind in Second Life, and they built a kite.
Oh.
And we were just thrilled.
I like Puppet Tom. It's a puppet who he actually does. I think he puppets you as well. He puppets Jonathan Abrams, so it doesn't seem to like Jonathan Abrams from Friendster. But we have something called the Impact Awards that we just launched to honor our members for their positive impact on our culture. And he entered, you know, as a puppet and, you know, had a discourse on why he should win. And I don't think he's going to, but it was a nice try.
He's not here, but
to me, the thing that I'm always surprised about is how anchored in the real social world Facebook is. So there's all the social pressure around real world things like stating your relationship status online. So, I mean, I think in a lot of colleges, it's become, you know, in high schools, it's become standard that you're not quite in a relationship until you're willing to say that you are and with whom you are. And similarly, when it's done, you know immediately.
The first thing you do is go change the site, right? By the way, I do need to say, for the radio audience, you're listening to the Commonwealth Club's Inforum program, and tonight we're talking about online personas, defining the self in a virtual world. I'm David Ewing Duncan, and I'm here with Robin Harper, Vice President of Community at Second Life, Sean Gold, Senior Vice President at MySpace, Mark Zuckerberg, founder and CEO of Facebook, and Reid Hoffman, founder and CEO of LinkedIn. All right. Any more questions?
With companies becoming more and more interested in the way that their employees are representing themselves online, everything from their identities on your site to their blogs and everything else, and also disciplining them when they have behavior that they don't find appropriate, things such as revoking offer letters, which I know has happened, sometimes suits for trade seekers and whatnot, what are your thoughts on the concept of activities happening in the virtual world being just as, quote-unquote, real as things in the real world? And where is this going to take society?
Oh, that's a big one.
Sean, you want to take that? Yeah.
I'll take it. Well, I mean, people have to be mindful of how, you know, of presenting themselves in a public forum. You can make yourself private on, you know, in MySpace particularly. But, you know, there was an interesting story. I was talking to this cultural anthropologist, Dana Boyd, who was telling me about an interaction she had with an admissions person at a college. And they said that they had gone on MySpace and seen that this kid was, like, very he was from the inner city, and he was had very gang-oriented profile, and he seemed just very rough, and they weren't sure they wanted that kind of person in their college. And she had explained that, you know, this kid has a life in the city. He has to protect himself. He has to defend himself. He has to live within that culture. He's trying to break out of that culture and go to your college. You have to look at it in the context of why he's expressing themselves, where he lives. You just, you know, you can't look at it, you know, so vertically, so unilaterally. So as long as, you know, it's going to take a sea change of people understanding how people express themselves online, and hopefully this program will do that here at the Commonwealth Club tonight.
Are people learning, though, with that? I mean, I've... Not that I'm spying on my kids, but I did see a rather silly picture that my son had put up, and I said, you know, if you're looking for a job, that's not a great picture, and he took it down.
Yeah, I think they're learning. I mean, I tell parents to one, give their kids, you know, tell the kid you want to visit their page and give them 24 hours to clean it up so they're not embarrassed. And then, you know, talk to your kid. It's a great communication tool to find out how they see themselves, how they express themselves, and, you know, and communicate. It's actually a new opportunity that never existed before.
That's for sure.
Yep. I'm interested in sites like Volunteer Match. And, Mr. Gould, you mentioned relationship maintenance. What I'm interested in is community maintenance. And I've been on MySpace for about 9 months now, sharing information about a project I've been working on before most of these people were born. Back in 1979, a congressman proposed a national youth service program where youth would be challenged to consider doing community service as an alternative to military service. And his idea was to have them register at 17 and then provide feedback at 18. Is it possible to do this on the internet in the sense of the Congress isn't going to do it, but to create this on a volunteer basis as another type of site where youth would sign up and then think about their roles and then indicate what organization or what activity they might want to link into and perform some kind of activity at? And would that crash and burn, or would that grow and
I think
catch fire?
The best person to build that application is Mark Zuckerberg, quite frankly.
You heard
the technologist.
It here.
But, I mean, if you build it properly, you know, obviously, I think the opportunity is certainly there. We see a lot of people connecting around positive causes, and MySpace, you know, as a company, is very much interested in affecting positive social change. It would actually be irresponsible for us not to be in that space. So, you know, like, you know, as far as our role in society, it's to, you know, improve the lives of our members and enable them to help each other. And there's over 100,000 religious and spiritual groups on MySpace. There's probably over 5,000 causes, significant causes that are on MySpace. So, I mean, the answer is yes. You just have to execute well to make that happen.
You have the brains. I just, you know, have simple ideas.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Along the same lines, I appreciate you being here tonight. But I mentioned in real world communities, you've all built, you know, beautiful walled gardens, you know, communities that are independent. But why can't I use the same logon for LinkedIn and MySpace, or have a Facebook community within Second Life? What are you doing to move towards open standards, user centric identity?
Well, we're struggling with capitalism. It's really getting in the way. I mean, that's just really, I mean, that's a one word answer.
Well, we're actually doing a couple of things.
The way the sites work have fairly different semantics. I mean, for example, what a connection on LinkedIn means is someone that you know well enough that you would refer to other people who are important professional connections to you. That's not the same thing that a friend on MySpace means, right? There's actually different semantic rules, a different way that each of the sites work. So it's, you know, a universal passport login, sure, that could work if it was available as a function, but the interplay of the communities have different social norms, different rules, different interactions, that sort of thing. That's the there's some substantive issues as well as the capitalism.
We think about it in terms of portable identity, and we actually released a feature yesterday that now would allow you to put your MySpace page into your Second Life profile. We also are, as part of that identity system I was talking about earlier, sometimes in the next 6 months or so, you'll be able to put your World of Warcraft name in your Second Life profile and have that verified, so that you will then be able to find your guild in Second Life.
We have a development platform that allows people to write applications on top of Facebook that use Facebook information, as long as someone is willing to authenticate with their, you know, email and password. So, I don't know. I mean, I guess we're moving towards that, but the capitalism thing does get in the way.
You're getting such a proliferation of sites, especially these niche sites. It seems like if you're going to stay as a general site, it would be a way that the business is trending in a way. Next question.
Well, I think I speak for the group in saying thanks for being there. We really enjoy all of the sites that you represent. I'm interested, and I don't know if Sean and Robin, you guys can respond to this, but certainly Mark and Reed. What happened in the early days? You built the site, and I know if you build it, they'll come, but what happened? How did you populate the site? Did you have a marketing plan? I'm thinking RFPs. What did this look like?
Well, go ahead. I just threw the site together in about a week when I was at school.
Oh, great.
It isn't actually that impressive. It was very simple back then. But, I mean, within a couple of weeks, a lot of the students at my school had signed up, and then a bunch of people started writing in and asking for us to expand to other schools. So my roommate joined me, and we started expanding it. And then when we were done with colleges, we added high schools. And then when we were done with that, we added other stuff. And mm-hmm. kind of just went from there.
All word of mouth, all organic then, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
For us, the 13 employees who were working at LinkedIn at the time we launched all sent out invitations. It was 108 invitations the first day, I think. That's it.
So it started with 108 people?
No, 13.
I mean, you sent out to those people, yeah. And then it just kept building. Any other stories along those lines with you guys?
Yeah, sure. Story. We saw the opportunity with Friendster, and that's kind of the audience that we were going after. They were having some technical difficulties. You couldn't.
He's really got it out for.
Couldn't get on the site. Took like 40 seconds to have a page load. Kind of ironically, they're actually the most popular social network in Guam and like the Philippines because they didn't actually notice there was a problem because their connectivity issues that they have there. But they also, another misstep that Friendster made was they didn't understand that social networking, at least our kind of social networking, is about self-expression. And when people were creating fakester names, as they call them, or putting bands online or hacking the template to express themselves in a more robust way, they kick people out of the network. Mm-hmm. And we developed the site by watching what the people did and then offering tool set to further that action.
How long did it take to build the site for MySpace?
Took probably about 30 days, really, to get mm-hmm. the base concept up.
Interesting.
Yeah, let's move on. Sorry, we just got a long line back there.
Okay.
We're going to have to take a little extra time, by the way, try to get as many of your questions as we can.
Okay, so I have a bit of a two-part question, and I hope you don't mind. My first question is that you all talk about efficiency, and I was hoping that you could define that further because I think the assumption is that if it's faster and wider reaching, it's better. And I just wanted to know if that is what you are arguing.
It's not necessarily faster or wider reaching. A lot of it is just easier. You know, if you have the choice between two things that, two ways to communicate, two ways to do anything, you probably are going to do the one that's easiest for you, assuming that they're the same. Then, I mean, if one is significantly faster or is going to get you a better result than the other, then you'll probably do that too. So, for example, you can make a page on one of these sites, and then other people can go view it. Right? And if you have the choice to either do that or make a page that no one views or that one person views, like one is more efficient than the other. So, there's all those components, and then I think that there's also another component of just helping you get at the information that your friends are putting on the site. So, that I think a lot of is just about surfacing the most interesting stuff, surfacing it in an efficient easy and quick way, so that way you can have these short user sessions where you just get to absorb all the information that your friends are putting up.
To amplify on Mark's point, for example, I was talking to a journalist this morning who was looking for interesting, the trend of what's going on in clean tech in the Valley. And so just go in, you type clean tech, you type environment, et cetera, and you actually begin to find the profiles of some people who are working on this kind of thing, and you find them much faster in terms of, oh, that might be an interesting person to talk to, or that might be. What otherwise might have taken you a week or 2 weeks to track down, you identified some people in about 3 minutes.
Just a quick question.
Yeah, and then my second question is that do you think that there is a kind of inherent contradiction in our culture right now that has this kind of fascination with these sites, but also so much concern about privacy? And I was wondering why you think that contradiction exists where people freak out about things like the Patriot Act but then post all their personal information online.
Well, I think it's a question of control. What you post is your decision. But when people think that the government is building databases and they don't know what's in there and they can't take control of it, then there's a problem.
Mm-hmm. But then when do they lose control over this information that they're disseminating? I mean, how much of the information that you put about yourself online can be erased? Is what I'm wondering, from especially sites like MySpace or Facebook. I mean,
well, if it's indexed by, you know, the search engines, then, you know, there's a public record. So again, it is about control, and it's about self-expression versus privacy. You know, there's they definitely are, you know, diametrically opposed in some sense, and certain things that you want to keep private. But it's also about, you know, again, education and understanding how to conduct yourself and online, and, you know, for what you want to reveal, what you don't want revealed. Mm. It's about personal choice.
Okay. Thank you.
Next question.
It's sort of interesting that my predecessor mentioned all this stuff about privacy, because I just read a thing online about a huge conspiracy between the CIA and Facebook to get all the information that people have. Basically, really what I'm wondering is that, especially with Facebook and MySpace, is that we have, with all this competition and all these various social networking sites, you guys mentioned Friendster previously. Like, that was something that had a $30 million buyout offer on the table from Google, and it turned it down. And now they'd probably be lucky to get a fraction of that. What I'm really wondering is that, number one, how do you guys keep your sites, you know, at the very pinnacle of our culture? And number two, where do you guys all see your sites 10 years down the line? I'm just sort of curious.
Well, I can tell you, you know, MySpace takes a sociological approach to the platform. I can't tell you what the technologies will be in 10 years, but I can tell you that, you know, we, at its core, social networking is about identification and individuality. It's about individuality, self-expression, and identification, connecting. And then we look at the core human needs that surround that, which are, you know, confidence building, appreciation, belonging, recognition, access, self-expression, and discovery. And we build out all our feature sets looking at how anything we do addresses those core human needs. So as technology evolves, the technology we implement will enhance those particular core human needs. It's impossible to say what they'll be in 10 years. I can barely guess what they'll be in, you know, a year and a half.
Anybody else want to do the 10? Robin, where would yours be in 10 years?
Maybe William Gibson.
Yeah. We think that Second Life has the potential to be a three-dimensional version of the internet. You know, if you think about the islands that people own or the land that they own, it's analogous to a website where you are putting up content, doing something that expresses your interests or is a business or whatever it is you want to put up there. And the difference being that today you can be on a page in Amazon.com, it's a 2D space, and there could be 10,000 other people there and you wouldn't know it. But in a three-dimensional space, you could be engaged in e-commerce, but you could be doing it with other people.
For 84 hours a week.
Or four, which is the more average number.
Next question.
Yeah, this is a question for Mark. I'm wondering how the dynamics change as your college students graduate and move into the real world, both in terms of how they keep up with their old friends and in terms of building new communities in a city or a suburb.
So it's actually really similar. I mean, we've evolved some stuff as as the user base has grown. I mean, when we started off, the only type of network we had was colleges, and then as we've expanded, we have added work networks so people can join a network with the people they work with. Also, you know, location-based networks, so that you can see the profiles of the people around you, depending on how they've set their privacy. But I mean, the retention rate, the amount that people use the site, the usage patterns are all very similar. Even like the size of the network and stuff like that.
Do you see people joining who weren't originally involved in college and are just joining as part of their work or city community?
Yeah, people join in all different demographics.
I'm a little short for this. So I had two questions, but I'll stick to the one that has to do with online personas. and community. So there's this idea in the real life that we have friends and we have acquaintances. And so how do you think, and this is probably for Sean and Mark more, how do you think that your sites blur the lines between your friends, your strong ties, and your acquaintances that are your weak ties? And how do you think that affects your users and their perception of their social network?
Well, I think that they allow for connections with both. I mean, some of the keeping in touch functionality that we've been talking about is especially applicable to weaker ties. Mm-hmm. But I mean, on a site like Facebook, where you have really granular control over the information that you share with specific people, I mean, that's good for, you know, everyone.
Yeah, I mean, there's MySpace probably is, people have, you know, more friends on average than Facebook. Well, there's more people, there's lots of different kinds of people, and it's a much broader, you know, application in society, and people, you know, it ties back to the personal branding thing. You're, as much as video and music are part of your personal branding experience, so are your friends. And so, you know, that's part of why, you know, people have lots of friends on MySpace, but people use it in many different ways. Some people have tight circles, some people have broad.
So, Mark, on Facebook, I've been using it for probably the 3 years and have 300 some friends, but I don't really want to share the same information with all of them. And do you ever think about letting users self-define networks of like subsets of friends that are really those stronger ties they'd rather share information with?
Yeah, sure. I mean, we're building stuff all the time.
Next question. We got a couple minutes left here, so let's try to get as many as we can.
About a month ago, there was an article on the front page of the Wall Street Journal called MySpace, ByteSpace, talking about some of the trend, if you will, of those who got overwhelmed with 4,000 friends they never met and are leaving. I don't know if it is a trend or not. But to what degree this is a concern of you seeing members going to niche sites, being overwhelmed, A, by having to maintain this number of people, maybe being subject to more spam or unwelcome comments, et cetera?
My biggest concern is that the press is going to run out of things to write about. People leaving MySpace seems like a good story. I mean, you know, it could happen. It's just actually not happening. You know, MySpace can fail, for sure. Like, GeoCities failed, like Friendster failed. Like, you know, we have the good fortune to have seen those companies fail and look at why. You know, GeoCities failed in part because they didn't evolve the platform. They were about self-expression. They weren't really about human connection, and they were actually kind of weak in the self-expression area. And they were also a big part of why GeoCities was not that interesting. It was pre-digital camera, which has changed self-expression dramatically. And video will, you know, take things to the next level. Spam is a issue on MySpace, you know, and it's a big concern, and it's something we put a lot of technology into. There's a lot of, you know, and so, you know, if we don't evolve, that's part of the communication platform. If we don't add, you know, more mobile functionality, we don't limit spam, we don't increase integration with IM, the company will fail. You know, if we don't expand the self-expression platform, add tagging and things like that, the company will fail. It has to evolve. Safety and education has to evolve, and the same thing with, you know, media aggregation and international growth. So, you know, it's a great question, specifically about, you know, the communication aspect, and because that is taking away from the efficiency. If you take away from the efficiency, then people will go elsewhere.
Next question.
Hi, my question is primarily for Sean and Mark. I heard you talk a lot about efficiency and the efficiency of conveying information to other people. But one of the things that I've seen with the users of your site is that they tend to use your sites for a whole lot of time, sometimes multiple hours a day. I don't think too many use it for 84 hours a week, but I mean, coming recently from college, a lot of people use Facebook 2-3 hours, sometimes 4-5 hours a day. And how do you feel about the very real possibility that the supposed sites that are making communication more efficient are ultimately making people a lot less productive?
There are different measures of productivity. I mean, I think that keeping in touch with the people who I care about and having a sense of what's going on in their lives and knowing what's going on around me are really valuable things all the time. It may not help me do my problem set, but I dropped out anyway.
Yeah, I'm glad Mark spoke first because it was much smarter than what I was about to say. But you know, when I turned 30, I was like, holy, I didn't say moly, but I'm, you know, like, what am I doing? Like, I'm 41 now, so that was a while ago. But I was like, what am I doing? Like, am I on track? And so I had to come up with this monitor of what success was. And I broke it down to five things, which was friendship, family, health, vocation, and love. And I looked at how I was, you know, and I didn't necessarily need to be at my goal, but I needed to be on my way. And definitely health was one, number one. I think love was number two. And family was number three. Love and family kind of switched back and forth. And then, you know, friendship and work was last. So what really mattered to me, you know, was the soulful things in life. And, you know, sometimes the soulful things are, you know, the soulful aspect of MySpace is sort of may drag on the vocational aspect of the rest of your life. If, you know, everything has to be done in balance.
And it doesn't keep you away from those other things?
You know, life is all about balance.
We have one more question here. I think that'll
wind this up. I'll make it quick.
Here.
I know you guys have been waiting to go get some wine. I work for a company that represents marketing firms who come to us all the time right now and say, oh, my God, I got to get on Second Life, got to get on MySpace. You know, we want to leverage your communities. And I'm just curious from your perspectives how marketing firms are helping or hurting your individual communities.
I can answer that as well. I mean, it's an important part of the community. Actually, one thing I didn't mention, you know, as far as an opportunity to fail is not evolving the marketer platform. Marketers, you know, are very welcome into the community as long as they enhance why people are there in the first place. If they add value to the community, they're great. If they detract from the community, they suck. So, you know, and why are people there? They're there to express themselves, you know, connect with people and discover culture. And so that's how marketers are, you know, innovating, incredibly inserting themselves into a networked culture. I mean, the goal is to have, you know, some value proposition that enhances one of those three things, and then you take advantage of the efficiencies of a network culture by getting your messages, you know, distributed virally. So it's really just about being couth and empathizing with the audience and why they're there. You know, marketers, before I said, you know, we choose our friends for our ability to amuse them. So marketers have, and the power of brand, has the ability to recognize individuals and flatter them. And you know, that's another pretty effective approach, and offer belonging to a certain group. So it's, you know, I'm going on a little bit, but it's really about just adding value to the community. It's pretty simple. Like, marketers should hire a lot of people who are popular in high school. And then they'll be.
I'm going to cut you all off there because we do need to end, and people have stayed over. In fact, the whole business part of the discussion, we were talking about personas, but we could have a whole other panel, I think, on the business of how these things are run, and hopefully we will. So let's give a big hand to the panelists, their thoughts and words. Now this meeting of the Commonwealth Clubs in Forum is adjourned.